You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to the Vegan Report. I'm Ryan, and today we're celebrating a powerful victory by Madeline Krasno, founder of Justify, against her alma mater, the University of Wisconsin-Madison. The university censored her online denunciation of the cruel animal testing conducted in its labs, but Madeline fought back and won. She shared with me shocking new details about how the university monitored her social media and even planned to infiltrate an animal rights lecture by creating fake accounts. We also discussed Brian Koberger, the Idaho killer, who surprisingly is vegan. Plus, the launch of Madeline's new podcast, which I'm really excited about, and how allies of this movement can emerge from the most unexpected places. Check out the episode notes to connect with Justify and Madeline. Her initiative is groundbreaking and truly deserves your support. If you want to know more about Madeline's inspiring journey, check out episode 51 of the podcast, Waking Up from the Nightmare of Animal Testing. Finally, I invite you to share this podcast with your tribe. Subscribe to the show, leave a positive review, and help grow this podcast. Every bit of support counts. Thank you. Maddie, welcome back to the show. Third time here. Thank you so much for having accepted my invitation.
Thank you so much for having me back.
And you're back with some great, amazing, positive news. You've announced that about 5 days ago, I think, on August 5. So let's start with this. What is the breaking news?
Well, actually, the breaking news happened on August 1st. I think I only let you know maybe on August 5th. I can't remember. Time is confusing. But yes, we found out that my free speech lawsuit against the University of Wisconsin-Madison, my alma mater, the appeal was successful in our favor. We won.
Congratulations. So how did you learn the news? Was it an email? Was it the phone call? Was it?
I was with my dog at the vet, and all of a sudden I looked down at my phone and I had like four messages from my lawyer at the Animal Legal Defense Fund, and I hadn't opened the messages yet, but I was like, Caitlin's texting me. Why is Caitlin texting me? And I was like, oh my God, Caitlin's texting me. And so I opened the messages and it was like, we got the ruling. We won the appeal. I'm still reading through it, but I just wanted to let you know. And so that was like Friday afternoon, August 1st, which, you know, it was a Friday afternoon. So it was already like evening on the East Coast where she is. So end of the week, which is kind of where like I got to, you know, enjoy myself, celebrate on the weekend, and then, you know, hit the ground running on Monday with the news kind of taking over and getting some media features.
She texted you the news. She's a millennial.
She texted me the news, yes. And then later I got emails and stuff, but she just wanted to like right away be like, hey, Maddie.
But that's a generation thing. She's a millennial.
It is. Yeah, totally. I mean, I was like, literally, this is the perfect way to get the news.
Exactly. I'm not criticizing it.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do a quick recap. You know, what was this? This was an appeal, I think. The first time they won their case, And then you went on appeal, and this time you won. So what happened there?
Yes. Well, what happened there? You know, I think we could probably kind of circle back to, okay, let's start at the beginning here. So I start speaking out about my experience working in an animal research lab, and I'm taking to Instagram and Facebook to do this. I am commenting on my alma mater's Instagram and Facebook. So again, this is the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where I worked in one of their primate labs during college. And I was basically trying to share about my experience and also, you know, inform students that this is still going on. This is our community. You all have a right to know what is happening, what this is doing to the animals, what it's doing to the humans who are involved. And so ultimately, Madison was not thrilled, surprisingly, with these comments. They ended up censoring my account, and that led to this free speech lawsuit, because the University of Wisconsin-Madison is a publicly funded university, which means they're getting government funding, tax dollars, to do the work that they do, which includes animal research. And so we had this free speech case that we brought on. And, you know, I got to pause to explain this whole keyword testing thing, because it all ties back to that. So these keyword censorship, this keyword censorship that was taking place, we found out about because after I had been censored, they uncensored me, basically. And I was allowed to comment again. But what we were finding out is that some of my comments would show up and some of them wouldn't. And so what ended up happening is we learned there was this thing called a keyword list, where any word on that list, if someone commented about it, that comment would be invisible. It would only be seen by the person commenting and like the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and the public wouldn't see it. And this list was made up almost entirely of words related to animal research. So you can imagine that's impacting people's ability to talk about animal research. And when we found this out, we added this to the lawsuit, but then we also were wondering who else was engaging in this keyword filtering practice. And we found out that there were other universities that were government funded engaging in this practice, trying to censor discussion related to animal research. And we also found out that the National Institutes of Health was doing the same thing. And that is absolutely wild, because the National Institutes of Health is the number one funder of animal research in this country, the United States. So we ended up bringing on a second free speech lawsuit against the National Institutes of Health. And that was me, my friend Ryan Hartkoff, who was just a Madison resident who wanted to help me with my cases and cares about the issues of animals and research, and then PETA. And so we were the plaintiffs in that lawsuit. We sued the NIH, we lost, we appealed, and we won. So that win was 1 year before I won this lawsuit against the University of Madison. And because they're similar, you know, we think that that is part of the whole decision with the ruling, because the cases are very similar. It's about free speech online. How does that go for summing this up?
It's great. You basically set your own precedent for your second lawsuit.
Yeah. Even though the Madison lawsuit was actually first, we won the NIH came after, but we won that one first. And then, yeah, ultimately, though, I think, yes, we're setting a precedent. It's very exciting.
It's fascinating. Okay. What are those social media platforms? I think it was Instagram, Facebook.
Yeah, it was Instagram and Facebook that I was using. So that those are the platforms that were included in this lawsuit in particular, or in both of these lawsuits in particular. So they were both using keyword filters on Instagram and on Facebook to basically control the conversation.
And when did you notice that it was being censored? Because you said, you know, you see your comment in the comment section, but other people don't see it.
Right. And that's, I mean, you know, all things considered, that is wonderfully sneaky, right? Because someone thinks then, yes, I've made a comment. I've put my perspective out there. And, you know, you just kind of assume, okay, like, I did it. I think what struck me is that there were certain times where I would comment something and I was like, it's really weird that no one's reacting to what I said here. You know, like you would just kind of expect even just like a like, let alone like someone responding to it. And there was nothing. And that struck me because other times I would comment and there would be a lot of reaction. And so it was like, what's going on here? And what ended up happening is I would go to my friend Ryan, who I mentioned, who ended up being a plaintiff on the NIH lawsuit. And I was like, do you see my comment? Like, what's happening? And he was like, no, I don't. Like, I see this comment. I don't see that comment. We're like, well, why do we see this comment and not that comment? And so Ryan was the one who did a FOIA request, the Freedom of Information Act request, and found out that they were engaging in these blocked or censored word lists. So that's how we figured it out. It was really because I was expecting a reaction that I wasn't getting.
Why was that filter in place? You know, they made that decision of censoring
they
people.
Sure did.
Was it a way to discourage that kind of discourse? So they're thinking someone like Maddie will come and start, you know, commenting bad things, things that would hurt our reputation. And if there are no reactions to her comment, then at some point she will stop, you know, commenting. But also we will hide her, you know, problematic comments from the rest of the community. So they're isolating you while discouraging you to continue commenting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's this idea that if we can prevent this discourse about what is taking place here, the animal research, which has been going on for so many decades. I mean, the University of Wisconsin-Madison has one of the most well-known histories of animal research because of Harry Harlow, the infamous primate researcher. I literally went on to work in his lab long after he had died, but regardless, it's, you know, the backbone of this university is animal research. And, you know, they will proudly discuss it, but only from, you know, their own perspective, right? They're not actually wanting to allow this discourse to take place that questions it. And so the idea on their social media account seemed to be, well, if we can prevent this from happening, then we won't be attracting, you know, negative attention to this. Because the reality is that a lot of the public is not into animal research.
Yeah, it's not helping. Your comments are not helping.
No.
When you announced the good news, you said, those are two victories. So there's one victory for animal rights, for the animals. What is the second victory about?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's the victory for the animals themselves, which, of course, I mean, you know, it's not like I'm getting animals out in this moment, but it's a victory in that we can advocate for them more openly and not get censored. But also, you know, it's a victory for people who have been a part of this industry and deserve to be able to talk about their experiences and feel heard and understood, because it's, you know, it's pretty psychologically damaging to be a part of this. You know, everyone has their unique experiences, but when you care about animals and you're put in a situation where you are also complicit in their harm, it hurts you, you know? Like I'd like to think that most humans inherently want to help someone who is suffering, help someone who is being harmed. And that's what I went into the lab to do in the first place. Like I went in there to care for these animals. I was a caretaker. And yet I'm caring for animals whose lives don't belong to them and who ultimately, you know, are going to be killed in the name of science. And that, you know, caused a lot of moral distress. And it's something that needs to be talked about because we are creating a bunch of people. This industry is creating a bunch of people who are shutting down their empathy, shutting down their compassion, being told that their compassion is, you know, a problem or not ideal. Like you can have some compassion, but don't have this much. You can care a little, but don't care too much because, or else you become a threat.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
To the industry. So being able to talk about this is important because how are we going to do better? How are we going to actually care for humans and create things that help humans if we're so busy trying to protect an industry that's not even coming up with what it says that it's setting out to do?
What you're saying is so right. So much so that, I can give myself as a living example of someone who, if I did not cross path with you, I would never have thought of the suffering of the researchers. I mean, it's logical when you think about it, when you really think about it, but it never, crossed my mind that this was a big problem for them too. I always focused on the animals. And I think it's partly due to, all the campaigns that we got from different animal rights organizations. They always focus on the animals, never mention the researcher, or it's this cartoonish villain character.
No, that's it makes me, it gives me hope, like hearing you say that, because it's not to say that there aren't, I don't know, bad apples in the industry. There's bad apples everywhere, right? Like there's always going to be people who unfortunately are harming other beings, whether it's humans or non-humans, and doing and maybe just don't care, maybe really truly don't. But there is definitely an assumption that has been perpetuated that everyone who's a part of animal research is bad, you know, like wants to harm animals, is doing this solely for money, whatever it is. And again, I'm not saying that there aren't any of those people, but if we assume that everyone who's involved in this industry is that, then we are missing really important, like a really important reason to be moving away from this industry. This industry is damaging people. It is telling them to shut down their compassion and empathy. And that gets applied elsewhere. You know, when you learn that some lives matter less than others, you're not like, oh, that's just for animals. You start to apply that to other humans. And so we need to rethink what we are considering to be science, what we are considering to be progress, what we are considering is worth funding, you know, the ways at which we're trying to help humans, because there's other ways we could be helping humans, changing their lives drastically for the better right now with all of this, you know, billions of dollars that are used for animal research, and yet we aren't. And a lot of times when anything does come out of, you know, animal research that benefits humans, it's not even accessible to most people, right? Like you think about, especially here in the United States, think about our healthcare system, having health insurance, having access to, you know, what is needed. So many people don't. And so it's like, who are these miracle cures? Even if that miracle cure happens, who even has access to them?
Yes, it reminds me of a Oxfam campaign where they were denouncing social inequality, and they were posting pictures of the hands of deep sea fishermen in Asia. And, you know, yeah. You look at their hands and they're all wounded. There are fingers missing. And you look at that and you think, this is the kind of campaign we should have adopted with, I don't know, BETA or any, you know, yeah, big animal rights organization to stop fishing. You know, show right. The hands of the fishermen. Talk right. About the inequality. This yeah. Will hit people hard because, yeah. Let's be honest, you know, it's difficult to empathize with the fish.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not just that. It's like, it's like we also need to empathize with the humans. And if we don't, then what does that say about us? You know, like truly. And it's like, it starts to really make me kind of question some of the animal activism that takes place. It's like, you are out there saying you want, you know, you want humans, the general public, to open their hearts more to these animals. But then you at the same time are like, I will not empathize with this person because they worked in a research lab. I don't care what they did. I don't care what, like, you know, hard pass. And it's like, well, I don't know. Like, how are we need to set an example. We need and empathizing with someone, showing compassion doesn't mean you agree with what they did or didn't do. It just means that you're not out there demonizing them for their part in a very complicated system, you know?
Yeah, and you don't have a choice for your mental health, you know, to right. To like and maybe love your fellow man, to give them the benefits of the doubt, to respect them. If you don't do that, then how are you going to, you know, survive just mentally?
Yeah.
You know, that there is a deep misanthropy among many animal rights activists. I do see that. Yeah. And I do think it's damaging.
Yeah, I think it's, I have to agree. And I get it. Like, I get it. Like, I empathize with it because I understand how upsetting it is to see animals experience what they do. So it's not that I don't understand it. It's just that I think I'm over time getting better at holding this whole, like, both and whatever, like, whatever that is, where it's like, yes, and because I don't think demonizing humans altogether is also going to ultimately help animals. We need to realize that there is good out there that can be fostered and that can grow. And if we don't believe people can change, then what are we doing in the first place? You know, like, why bother? But I do. I know people can change. I know people can grow and they can do better. And that's why I do the work that I do. It's part of what led to Justify, this organization that is at its core, you know, sees the good in the people who were a part of this industry or are a part of this industry and have been misled by it.
Yeah, that's a great point. I know someone, she was a lobbyist for the turkey industry, I think. And now she's vegan and a sanctuary owner and one hell yeah. of an activist. So yes, believe in change. Believe that even the thing, you know, the people you think are monsters can, you know, become angels and your friends and allies in this fight. Let me ask you this. Do you feel like you're part of a change, a wind change in history right now? Because I feel like animal testing is at the end of its rope with the recent announcement of the NIH and different, you know, levels of government that they are going to, you know, let go of this practice more and more, if not ban it completely for certain animals. And now I see, you know, you winning in court against those big, you know, industries. I feel like this is an important chapter of history regarding animal rights. And you're one of those characters in that, you know, book written about it. Do you feel that? Do you feel like you're part of this momentum around this issue?
For sure. I mean, it feels a little surreal to have gone from, you know, suing the National Institutes of Health for not allowing us to talk about what is happening, what they are funding in terms of animal research, to the NIH putting on this like 4-hour live stream about how they're going to be prioritizing human relevant non-animal research. Like that, I mean, what? You know, like that's a turnaround. You know, and at the same time, like, I'm cautiously optimistic. I think that there's a lot of good taking place. And I also know that there is a lot of suffering still happening. And so it's, you know, there are things to celebrate. And also we need to keep up the momentum and hold the NIH and, you know, the powers that be accountable and say, like, we expect this to continue. We expect you to stick to your word. We want to start to see animal research phased out. We want to see these human relevant, you know, methods truly prioritized. I think there's a lot happening in the animal research space. I mean, I've had like 5 people over the course of the last year really contact me about different documentaries taking place, focusing on animal research. And that's so interesting to me because for a while it felt like no one's talking about animal research anymore. It's like we've almost sort of like kind of decided that we can't fight it somehow. And now there's this kind of renewed momentum and I love to see it. And I am excited about it. And I'm also overwhelmed by the suffering that's still happening. So it's, you know, yes and.
But I do think, you know, if you had to choose a field in animal rights where, you know, you'll feel more optimistic at the end of the day than, you know, pessimistic, then it would be animal experiments. And tying it back to our last conversation about people changing or, you know, having change come from unexpected people. I listened to an interview with the NIH secretary or something, the guy who is responsible for, you know, stopping those animal test experiments. And he's not, you know, the animal rights type. First of all, he's not even vegan. Then, you know, he's like very Christian and, you know, very conservative and in his way and very, it's not, you know, the person you would picture being an ally in your cause yet.
Right.
Here we are.
Yet here we are. Well, and I think it shows the power to, you know, to actually thinking about an issue holistically because, you know, animal research, it's kind of the original animal rights issue, right? Like this was sort of like the first issue that kind of brought about an animal rights movement. And yet, you know, for so long, there wasn't that much progress taking place. And even so, I feel like we could have had more seen more progress. But I think the issue is that, you know, I'm I'm still told this like very regularly. I've had people come to Justify's page and literally say, "You should be focusing on the animals. Like, why are you focusing on the humans? Like, this is about the animals." And first of all, I am always focusing on the animals. My mind is always on the animals. Just because I care about humans doesn't mean that I'm not thinking about animals. You know, like it's like I can care about them all. My empathy isn't limited. But also it's like sometimes the best work we can do for animals is by taking these issues and looking at them in ways that appeal more to the broader public. It's just the unfortunate reality is that not everyone cares enough about animals in research, even if we're talking about like the dogs and the monkeys, the species that people, you know, relate to the most. Because when they hear something like, well, science, like this saves our lives, like this is so important, you know, it's who would you save, this child or this mouse, you know, like they're gonna automatically gravitate towards defending the science. And we need to be able to come at this issue in a multitude of ways, not just by saying, you know, look at beagle number, you know, 1, 2, 3. This is what they've gone through, because that's just not going to hit home for everyone. And also, it's not the full picture. We can't get at an industry that is this powerful by ignoring the way it funnels young, impressionable people into it and then strips them of their empathy.
That's powerful, and it's so weird because not only you care about animals, but you're demonstrating that everyone cares about animals, including those who call.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Cause suffering to those animals by, you know, highlighting their suffering, their psychological suffering of those researchers, you're showing that they care, that everyone cares. And you're, you know, turning our attention to the industry, to the incentives, to you know, the real stuff that is making us do those things, that is feeding that abuse.
Right.
So yeah, very powerful. And the other thing is, and that's a bit of a sensitive issue, but recently there was those that murder, he's a vegan, by the way, which is, you know, not important,
But somehow always comes out.
always comes out. You know, I've been following this case because he's a vegan, and I wanted to see if, you know, the bad publicity around it, how it would
Impact.
unfold. Yes. What's his name? Brian Koberger. Yeah, Koberger.
Okay.
Brian Koberger. So I was looking at that case, following that case. Brian
Yeah.
Koberger is a vegan, and the families of the
Oh,
victims,
Brian Koberger.
Brian, yes.
Yes. Okay. I actually thought you were talking about a completely different case, like some animal activist that I had heard of. Okay. I'm on. Yes. I know what you're talking about now fully.
Yeah, everyone in the space of true
Yes. The
crime is
case of, yeah, the Idaho. Yeah.
killings.
Okay.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so this guy, I was listening to the families, and They were, you know, saying we wanted some closure. We wanted some explanation from him. And we also wanted details about the last days of the victims, the last moments, I should say, before they died. And, mm-hmm. you know, for someone, you know, outside of this, you know, the thought of having details about that feels morbid. But you mm-hmm. see that even, you know, in war crimes or things of the sort. And I think, you know, I want to hear the same from those researchers. I want to hear about the last moments of those creatures that were in those labs. Because, you know, they are the last witness of their last living moments and sometimes of their entire lives. And if those people, you know, if we put distance between us and those researchers, then we've just, you know, given away the possibility to learn about those important stories about all of those living beings that went through those places. And so we need them. We need to tell the stories of, you know, the mice, the monkeys, and all the other creatures that found their way there.
I think there's something about knowledge, right? Like knowing, understanding, and I think that plays a really interesting role too in the fields of science, right? Because we use that to justify a lot of what we do, and yet we control the knowledge that is shared, right? Because we're not sharing that knowledge. We're not sharing like these intimate moments of what these animals are going through, but we're saying, oh, we're going to do this study so that we can find this one thing out, and that might lead to this, and this is why we're justifying this, because it's all about knowing, right? So it's interesting to look at, you know, what we justify and how knowledge is sort of, what is the word that I'm looking for? Like weaponized. I mean, because now in that case with Brian, this killer, it's like he's keeping that to himself. He is weaponizing his knowledge about what happened. And yeah, it's just, I haven't thought a whole lot about this other than just how completely gruesome and senseless the whole thing is. And yeah, this is just like me like now pouring out thoughts. Is this what a podcast is for? I think it's interesting to this concept of being vegan and committing such senseless acts, because I obviously do not know this individual. I do not know what was going through his head. But I think that a lot of people have this tendency, and I think this is like throughout, like just animal rights activists in general, we view animals as innocent, but we don't view humans as innocent. Right? Like we're quicker to say, well, what was she wearing? Or what was, you know, what did they do that one time? Or what did they say? And so it's like, there's a problem there, right? There's a problem with saying like, you deserve innocence, but you don't, and what this innocence means for them. And I guess I'm just, I'm sitting with like this question of, what, you know, is it, because I think, wasn't there a dog in this situation that was unharmed? And I it makes me wonder if, you know, that's part of it, the presumed innocence of this animal, but not of these students who deserve to be alive and here with us today.
Yes.
I'm not entirely sure if any of that made sense, but
it made sense.
Stream of consciousness.
Well, that's what this podcast is for, you know, advancing the conversation. Yeah. So bringing new thoughts and ideas. And this concept of innocence, you know, it also reminds me of the Commission for the Amnesty or Forgiveness, the big commission that was of reconciliation, I think, that was created after the apartheid regime in South Africa. And they invited perpetrators of racist crimes to go and confess their crimes in exchange of innocence, you know, of a innocence deal with the justice system. Because it was more important to share those stories, to put light on those stories, to give closure to the victims of, you know, those racist crimes, than to persecute the culprits and to send them in prison.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Also,
I feel like I need to read up on. I did not know about that. Yeah.
Yeah, one more reason to admire Nelson Mandela.
Yeah.
If there aren't enough. And also, I just realized another morbid detail. One of his victims was called Maddie, by the way, and she was vegan. And so let's...
Oh, I love that. Yikes.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, no. I remember when this all unfolded, and it's just horrific. It's just senseless. And I don't know that I have anything really, I don't know, insightful to say other than that. It's unforgivable.
Let me go back to your case. I wanted to
ask. I think what's interesting about the whole thing is not like this case in, or this in particular, like, but just in general is like what I hold as difficult, and what I know that people in general hold as difficult, is like, when is something like basically senseless and unforgivable, and when is that not the case? Because I know, I'm sure there's people listening who are like, why would you say that like what these researchers are doing to whatever dogs is somehow different, right? And there's some people who would say, absolutely, it's different. And then there's some who would say, like, I don't understand why there would be an ounce of empathy here. And that's where I think we have to look at these bigger systems at play and what has created like this field of animal research and what, you know, is acceptable in the name of science, and all of the gears that are in place to keep it kind of going, and ultimately putting people in this position of, yeah, what you're doing is going to save lives, so this is of course okay. So again, stream of consciousness, but like I'm just aware that there's going to be different reactions to this. Like, why am I saying absolutely write him off? Like, I'm writing him off. I am not empathizing with him. It's possible that like in his childhood, I know nothing about his childhood, but it's possible that like he went through things and experienced abuse, and I can feel empathy for the child, but I do not feel empathy for the killer and who he has become.
Yes, definitely. And you know, if we have reason to believe he is a danger to society, let's put him in prison. Right. Not out of spite, not out of, you know,
like out of protection of
exactly
the community.
Let's be cold-headed about this.
Right.
What was the other thing you said and I wanted to comment on? Oh, what do you make then of the tactics adopted by the ALF? Of, you know, calling researchers, threatening them with, you know, murder, or threatening their families, just intimidation tactics from ALF activists.
I was like, I'm going to talk. And then I was like, I'm not going to talk. You know, like my personal My personal feelings are that I don't think it's probably the most productive way to invoke change. I don't think it's fair to threaten harm, especially against someone's family, because of this. Again, I look at the animal research industry as this powerful entity that's just not as simple as this one individual, participating in or, doing this one study. And I'm not just, don't get me wrong. Like, there are researchers where I'm just like I would just, I don't know, myself be like, yeah, I'm writing them off. Like, I'm assuming they are not going to change. It's not, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to go and threaten their lives. Or it might mean that I write to the institution where they are and I say, this is egregious. What is taking place? It is wrong. This should not be happening. Like, I don't agree with their work, blah, blah, blah. But that's not my MO to threaten harm. I don't know. I think we live in a very complicated world and there's a lot happening that's causing a lot of suffering. And so I understand why people kind of reach this point of, should I throw this back? Throw that harm back. And so I get it. It's me, I empathize with it, right? But do I think it's the right thing to be doing? I don't, definitely not for me, definitely not for how I see change taking place, because I know too that, you might be going after this one researcher, but that researcher is going to go to the whole rest of their lab and say what's going on, and the rest of the lab's going to go, oh wow, these animal rights activists are crazy. That's totally right. If I was starting to question things, this is clearly the side I should be on, right? Like, it sort of unblurs the lines when I think the lines need to be blurred, because it's going to help people who are already questioning things or are already uncomfortable with what's taking place, even though they're a part of it. It's going to push them farther away from us. So yeah, there's my stream of consciousness on this. I think it's complicated, but it's definitely not the way I do things, and not the way I think is going to bring more of the insiders to a place where they feel like they can seek community and they can speak out about, what's happening.
I don't know if I remember that well. I don't know if they called researchers to threaten their families, but in any case, if you're being threatened with your life, you'll think about your family. You'll think that they're not safe. So,
you just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Yeah. And,
Yeah.
I personally, I go back to my faith. If I look at, Buddhism, you fight harm with non-harm. That's the universal rule. And I think there is a Christian version of that, of you present the other cheek. What was the expression?
Yeah.
In any case. So yeah, I think there is truth and power in that,
Yeah.
in fighting, hate with love and empathy and kindness and all of those good, wholesome things.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I know that these days there's question about, when people are being literally ripped from their homes and sent away from the only home they've ever known, you know, to a another country. Like, I understand that people are not gonna just like stand there and go like, "Hi, please stop." Like, they're gonna get physical, right? And I respect that. But that's why I think that it's like we just simply can't apply one thing, like one, we can't assume everything is the same, that handling one issue this way because it worked here is it's going to work there or it makes sense here. And that's where I, like, over time have been kind of trying to make sense of this, is that in this case it might make sense, but in this case I don't think it does. And that's okay. And maybe I'm wrong. You know, like I'm just kind of going by what I've learned and what I understand of this industry, which is also why I'm not going to speak to things that I know less of, if that makes sense. So.
It makes sense, which brings me to discuss social media.
Yeah.
I really
You know, I
wanted
love
to
discussing social media.
I really wanted to have your opinion on that because I am in a paranoia phase. I really feel like I had a conversation about media bias recently, and
Okay.
I really feel like if what happened to you can happen, and if you know this big industry of animal experimentation, animal agriculture, whatever, has funding for social media managers, PR firms, and so on, what stops them from trolling or infiltrating this movement just to derail it, just to, make us mad or create infighting or so what do you think of that? Am I being
Am I
conspirational?
paranoid?
I get the tinfoil hat, like, yeah.
It's funny because it's like I, during the discovery phase of my lawsuit, the University of Wisconsin-Madison admitted to basically monitoring my account, but also discussing like creating fake profiles to attend presentations of mine.
Wow.
Yeah, which again, my response is always like, you're more than welcome. I don't say anything, you know, in presentations online that I think that I wouldn't say, you know, with Wisconsin representatives in front of me, right? Like so it's like, you're welcome. Attend the presentation. You don't have to hide. I mean, maybe if you're hiding, it's because you're actually afraid to be recognized. So, you know, I think it's definitely a thing. I'm sure there's always talk of, you know, are there some secrets we can find out that are gonna, you know, help us to better kind of disempower? Is that a word? Disempower? Disempower. It's like, you know, the animal protection movement or whatever sort of we're trying to get at. I don't know. I don't worry about it that much. I'm aware, especially based, you know, the organization that I've co-founded, Justify, that we're definitely a group that is going to have eyes and ears on us, because our literal purpose is to support people who have been a part of this industry, may even still be a part of it. And help them to share their stories, to kind of be this community that they haven't had, where they're not going to be demonized, and they're also not going to be told, like, they're not going to be like thrown justifications about why they should keep doing what they're doing. We're here to help them, you know, think about this and not make them justify what they're doing. So that being said, we're definitely going to have, if we don't already, eyes and ears on us. And it's an unfortunate risk. There's risks inherent, I think, in lots of things. And so, we are, of course, trying to do our best to mitigate risk and to protect individuals as much as we can. But I think it also just shows how important this work is. And ultimately, I just know that this is the right thing to do. And so that I don't know. I don't, I mean, this is not like beautifully said by any means, but I'm just like, this is right. Like, people should be sharing the truth about what is going on in this industry. And so, yeah, if we'll deal with what is going to come, and I'm going to protect people and support people who do what I've done, which is come forward and make these stories known, because I know that we can do better collectively as a society to help humans and animals alike. And animal research is just not the way that we should be doing that at this point.
Let me go back to what you said, the crazy thing you said. So they were monitoring you and also creating fake profiles to do engagement with your posts. Is that it?
No, so my understanding what this was about is that I was going to be doing I did a speaking, like a virtual presentation for what I believe was the Raven Corps at the time, a group that, like an activist group that you might be familiar with. And the thing with the Raven Corps is that they were specifically a group for youth, so like 13 to 18, I think. And so because of that, for this event, they had specifically said, like, this is meant to be an event specifically for youth. And they were trying to curate it that way, as opposed to like a lot of my talks, like it's just like anyone can jump on and join. Like, you can sign up. It doesn't matter who you are, where you are. But they were specifically saying like it was for 13 to 18-year-olds. And so the University of Wisconsin, these staff members, were talking about creating fake profiles so that they seem to be in, what counted as, 13 to 18-year-olds, which to me is even weirder. But you're like, this is so much worse than I thought it was. But again, it's like, I think for this call, like, I was like, hey, I like got onto it, and I remember seeing my grandma on. So you can't join. So my like 80 some year, well, actually, was she already in her 90s at that? She 80 or 90-year-old grandmother was on because she wanted to hear me speak. And it wasn't like they were like, you're not allowed to be here, So it was more of like guidelines than like you have to be 13 to 18. But regardless, my whole point is just like, y'all want to hear me speak? Come, I even spoke at Madison. Why weren't you there? You didn't want to come and join then. So yeah, it's a little ridiculous.
That's hilarious.
You're just like sitting here like laughing hysterically.
They are a university talking about creating fake minor
Yeah.
children profiles to go in
Exactly.
your talk
That
to spy on you.
Yeah, because anywhere else you wouldn't like need a fake, I mean, unless they were just like, I just don't want my name to be associated. But it was for this Raven Corps account, Raven Corps event, because it was one of the first times I was, doing this. I mean, now I've done so many. I'm sure they've listened to all of my podcasts and talks. But that was one of the early ones, which is probably why they were like, well, I wonder what she's gonna say. I don't know. I don't even remember what I said because it was, a couple years ago now. Honestly, I don't remember what I said yesterday most of the time, or even earlier in our conversation. So all I know is that I tend to not say anything that I wouldn't want anyone else to hear, because,
I mean,
seems like a good rule to live by.
I'm sure it was recorded, and this conversation is also recorded. So if you have, if you're wondering what you said, you can always read.
That's true. Sometimes I do go back and listen to the recordings, and it's not like to be like, oh God, what did I say? It's just like, oh, like that was a good point that I brought up. I should remember to say that. Like, it's like more just, you know, because I am a very, I mean, you know this by now because this is my third time on your show, but I'm very like free flowing, right? Like I don't like to sound scripted. I've never wanted to like sound scripted. I rarely use any sort of script unless it's like, this is a point I need to make. I'm going to make sure it's there. But, you know, I just want to be real with people. And I want them to be real with me. So it's just how I function. Not to say that someone, you know, I have issues with people who do use scripts or like use more notes. This is just how I am. And, you know, hopefully people are cool with it.
I mean, you just, you know, spelled out the principles of podcasting. Like, be real, have a good conversation flow. That's about it. I mean,
well, and the exciting news is, guess who's also starting a podcast?
Yay!
So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, Justify is going to be starting a podcast very soon. So you'll get to hear lots of streams of consciousness, but not just mine, other people who have worked in the industry, just having these conversations, which I think is honestly going to be great because it's super nice to have those conversations. And like, again, we feel, even just talking to each other in that format, we feel supported. And then to be able to kind of offer that to others who are like, wow, I don't have anyone to talk to about this. And now I'm hearing people talk about this and it's resonating with me. So we're starting a podcast. So get ready. And I'm totally going to be coming to you to ask how to do it.
You are welcome. And I am looking forward to this podcast because I'm sure this will be an interesting, you know, you'll have some interesting conversations. Like I'm excited for this because, and I hate to do this, but if I look at, you know, most vegan animal rights podcasts out there, it's not that interesting. It's not that daring. It's always the same question, not the same questions with an S, the same question, which is, how did you become vegan?
Yeah.
And then there's this whole very uninteresting story about, you know, coming, finding footage or, you know, you've listened to one, you've listened to all.
No, there's a lot. I mean, it's, what is the word? Saturated, right? Like, I mean, I think just in general, the podcast industry is pretty saturated, but we feel good about this because this doesn't exist. I mean, that's the whole thing. Justify didn't exist, right? Like, we're the only organization in the world doing what we're doing. And so that gives us hope that, like, we can then, you know, help bring about positive change because it's not just kind of another organization doing kind of the same thing. And not to say we don't need multiple organizations working on different issues, but yeah, I think it's like if we want to be heard, we need to stand out. And as you said, it's like it's these days it's hard to stand out. Social media itself is saturated. It's hard to like show that you're unique and worth listening to. And I feel that every day. So
I agree, but you know, most podcasts don't last you know, past the fifth episode. Like
and people are just sort of like, this seemed like a good idea at the time.
Like I hope this doesn't happen with you. If you feel like it will happen, just reach out to me. But you know, I've seen so many animal rights podcasts just, you know, go reach the eighth episode and then just disappear from the face of the earth. Like they never existed.
Yeah, no, I, you know, we're, We're in this for the long game. I'm excited. We've got a lot of good ideas for this. I mean, this is the thing. Every time I'm on a podcast or like doing some sort of presentation, like I realize there's so much more to talk about than there's time for, right? And so I'm like, this is what the podcast is for. It's like there's always so much more we can dive into, especially as people who have been in this industry, because you don't realize how much people don't know, and people don't know how much they don't know about this industry. I mean, we could focus an entire episode just on like what it was like to learn how to restrain an animal in the lab and what that experience. And by whole episode, I mean there could be like multiple episodes, right? Like, and that's just like this tiny piece of what was asked of us, of what we did, of what we, were complicit in. And so I think the podcast is going to be a good thing for Justify.
I mean, you just need to choose a great name.
Yeah. We're working on that. We've got a few ideas.
I was sharing with some people that if it was not the Vegan Report, I would have called this podcast Veganism After Dark, something like that.
Yeah. Although, wait, wasn't that Vegan After Dark? Didn't like Sky have, wasn't Sky's called that at some point? I thought, do you know Sky?
Yes.
Wasn't his originally called Vegan After Dark? Or something was called Vegan After Dark.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, he was vegan. Yeah, he has this like Vegan After Dark thing.
What?
Yeah.
This proves our origin unoriginal.
This proves I am unoriginal. Yes, no, Vegan After Dark. I mean, I think that maybe he's using different names now because him and Dr. Crystal Heath are doing stuff together, and so I think that like I don't, or maybe he's still doing Vegan After Dark as well. I'm not honestly sure, but I know he has that coined for some of his content.
You know, what's possible is that I came across his podcast and I just, unconsciously took a liking for it, for the name of his podcast and attributed that to me. I read about this with literary agents and
Yeah.
editors, and they say I come across the plot of Harry Potter like 100 times a year.
Wow.
Yeah, people think that they're original,
Yeah, they're like, yeah, I've
but
come up with something new. And it's like, nope, still.
that's Harry Potter.
It's just Harry Potter revised.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Okay, Maddie.
Well, now you know.
now I know, yes. Did you want to add something before we end this conversation? Because we're in the middle of a heat wave. I stopped the AC.
And I am officially profusely sweating.
Yes.
Well, you're comfortably in a sweatshirt.
I'm looking red. Like,
For the record, we don't even have air conditioning here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where is
I
this
mean, some
heaven?
places
Where
do,
are
but
you
most of
even?
them still don't in the like immediate Bay Area because, Oakland, Berkeley, it's just historically has never gotten that hot. But yeah, anyway, do I have anything to wrap up with? It's been a pleasure, as usual. Always is. I would say, if anyone has questions, wants to reach out, definitely do. Please follow and subscribe and all of those fun things to Justify's work. On social media, we are at When We Justify, and our website's whenwejustify.org. I'm also on social media as Madeline Krasno, and I just appreciate everyone listening to this stream of consciousness.
Great parting words. If you have already subscribed, create a fake account and just subscribe to that account too.
Do it again.
Yes, do it again with other accounts. Like,
Brainstorm.
yeah. You know, it's possible now.
That was very funny.
Maddie, thank you so much. Yes, this was a very pleasant conversation and I learned a lot. Like, and I hope people did too. Thank you so much for your great pioneering work and looking forward to your podcast.
Yes. Can't wait. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you everyone for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action. Again, thank you so much for caring, and I will see you next Tuesday for a new episode.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.